You're listening to a podcast from catholicchurch.org.uk.
I heard and raised my eyebrows somewhat when you talked about Lebanon and, to an extent, Iran being exceptions to the small pockets of Christians living in those countries. I thought, Iran, perhaps a large pocket of Christians. I'm quite surprised. Tell me about the landscape there.
Well, again, Iran is a little bit, perhaps even more than Syria in many political circles. It's viewed as this political ogre, as this problematic country. And to some extent, it is a problem. And I think the problem is with the political establishment, which now, in my own personal view, is almost the Christian equivalent of a millenarian Muslim approach to politics. And that is very unsettling for me. The fact that the theocratic establishment, the religious establishment in the country, is trying to force its viewpoint upon the people, that of course also is something that I find seriously objectionable. So I'm not trying to paint any picture of Iran as a country where all is peace and harmony. But I've known Iran. I've been to Iran. Many people I know from the Bishops' Conference go to Iran quite regularly for different programs with people in Iran, both Christian and Muslim. And I'm sure that they would agree with me that the Iranians, by and large, as a people, are a very hospitable and kind people. All you need to do is forget the stereotypes and go into the streets of cities like Tehran, like Shiraz, like Isfahan, which has a huge Armenian community and a huge Armenian heritage to it. If you go to these places and you meet ordinary Iranians, as I've done sometimes, you would realize the sense of warmth and hospitality that they have and how politics is bigger than them. It's not really in their control, and which in itself is sad. But within this large country, very oil-wealthy country to some extent, although it's got economic problems at the moment, there is also a strong Christian presence. And that Christian presence is not always realized either by many, many people. And here again, the largest presence is an Armenian community. There's a huge Armenian community that dates back decades and decades and decades. And it's got its own church structures. It's got its own bishops, both in Tehran in the capital and in Isfahan in Jufa in the south. And I've spoken to these people. Of course, if you look at it from our perspective, from a Eurocentric perspective, you would say, well, there are no fundamental freedoms of expression, of choice, etc., etc. But from their perspective, as cultural Iranians who have been born in Iran and who live there, but who happen to be ethnically Armenian or other, there are many Baha'is still living in Iran, you would realize that if you disinvest the politics from those communities are to some extent viewed with respect and sometimes also with tolerance. So what I'm saying again, James, is that it is important to know that there are Christian communities in Iran. It is important to understand why organizations and churches such as the Bishops' Conference is engaged in different activities and programs, interfaith dialogue between Islam and Christianity, in terms of the Christian presence and the church in Iran, because there are Christians there. And this is something that, in my opinion, would encourage me to pray for those people, to stand in solidarity with those people, and at the very least to understand that those people exist there, and this is not as monochromatic a picture as people would wish it to be.
One thing that I would say to actually back you on your impressions of the Iranian people is that I've only been to Tehran once, but mm-hmm. That's exactly the experience I had. The warmth, the hospitality, the friendliness. I'm not going to take away from the oppression of Christians. I know little or nothing about that. But my experience was one of hospitality. I think part of the problem is the association between the stereotypical association between the regime and the people. Very different, I would say.
Well, that runs across most parts of the Middle East, James. It's not only in Iran. There is that stereotypical association. People, again, most people who've never visited Iran, and it's not easy to get into Iran, would look at the television cameras and would see all those demonstrations, for instance, recently with the so-called green demonstrations, or the oppression that takes place with some people in the religious establishment almost trying to force their vision upon the people, and would say, well, this is a pariah country. It's not a country that is worth looking at. Whereas, as you just said yourself, if you go and talk to the people, you see that the people aren't like that. And this is a phenomenon across the whole Middle East. Now, Iran happens to have Persian roots, is different. It's not an Arab country. But if you look at the whole Middle East and you look at the Arab countries as well, in a lot of those countries, there is such a wide divide between the rulers and those ruled. In other words, the ordinary citizens and the people who rule them, the sheikhs, the kings, the presidents, the emirs, the sultans, that you see that the people do not have the freedom to express themselves, but deal with those people as individuals, and you see that sense of humanity, that image that we have ourselves reflected through their eyes. And I think this is something that we should always remember when we talk about any country.
Let's move on to Lebanon. You also mentioned Lebanon a bit earlier. Let's get to the truth of the Christian experience in Lebanon.
Lebanon is a fascinating country. I love the country. I go there fairly often. I have a lot of contacts there. And first of all, it's a beautiful country to visit. In 1 hour, you can be from the highest mountain to the seaside. So in touristic sense, it's very nice. In senses of hospitality, food, etc., it's also very nice. Of course, Lebanon is also plagued by political uncertainties and political tensions. And the reason that is because Lebanon is almost a crucible of different faith denominations and confessions all put together. And at the same time, it's almost a land where different regional wars are being fought by proxy almost. But the interesting thing about Lebanon, which distinguishes it from other countries, is that unlike, say, Israel, Palestine, or Jordan, where you have just 2-4% Christians, or Egypt, for instance, where 10% of the Egyptian population are Coptic Christians, or, for instance, other countries of the region. In Lebanon, at this stage, despite a lot of emigration, almost, I would say, 35-40% of the Lebanese are Christians. And a lot of them are Maronite Catholics. There are also different other Christian confessions. There are many, many Orthodox Christians. There are Armenians. It's interesting. What fascinates me about Lebanon is that it has managed to preserve a very substantial Christian presence in its midst, that almost at some stage it was even much more, many more Christians were living there, but because of the successive civil wars and because of the issues involved, there are fewer of them now. But imagine a country in the smack in the middle of the Middle East, a very tiny country. If you look at the map and you compare, for instance, Lebanon to Syria, Lebanon is almost like an apostrophe at the end of Syria in terms of size and demography. But the country is fascinating, and about 40% are Christians, and those are Christians that have a major political role to play in the country. For instance, the president of the country by constitution has to be a Christian and is a Christian. Now, this is something that many people don't know about it. The problem is when politics becomes confessional, when the different confessions start playing one-upmanship games and try to strengthen their own communities at the expense of other communities. And this is part of the problem, the conflict that's going on in Lebanon, as well as, of course, many people will have heard, and this is nothing, it is not a discovery to say, that there are regional wars and regional struggles and regional conflicts and brinkmanships that are played out in Lebanon. For instance, you've got the Syrian role and influence, you've got the Iranian role and influence on the one hand, then you've got the Americans and the French wanting to have a say in how the country goes forward. And it's unfortunate, in a sense, that the Lebanese whether Christian or Muslim, find themselves in a situation where they almost have to be vulnerable pawns in a chess game that is being played out regionally, and Lebanon seems to be that chess board.
Do you know, I was going to say, isn't the problem, just having listened to you, that there are too many countries, some well detached from the region, that want to have their paws on an individual country? Too much interest, too much wish for control over someone else's country.
Precisely. And this is nothing new, James. I mean, this is something that has happened since the days of colonization. I mean, the whole Middle East was colonized by Western powers, mainly the British and the French. And they then divided through the Sykes-Picot Agreement and through different other agreements. They decided to parcel out the Middle East. You get this bit, no, you get that bit. And then once we went into a post-colonial area, what happened is that artificial borders were set up, were created, so that in a sense, there is a lot of the Middle East that is artificial. There's a lot of it where the borders were man-made borders that were almost done on a whim. And therefore, they don't stand to closer scrutiny, and they don't stand to the realities, the political, demographic realities of the region. What exacerbates the situation in a country like Lebanon or in other different countries is not only those different confessional structures, those different confessional communities, the different struggles and almost tensions sometimes between them, but also the fact when Christians are divided within themselves. Now, Christian division is nothing new. We look at the Middle East, and yes, I'm talking to you now about Lebanese Christians divided almost equally between two coalitions, which is regrettable in a sense because it weakens the Christian voice and it weakens the Christian witness and presence. Cardinal Mar Nasrallah Sfer, who is the patriarch of the Maronite Christians, the largest community in Lebanon, I've met him many times in his office recently, only a couple of months ago, 3 months ago, in which the man, he's an old 80-year-old octogenarian, and the man is so unhappy with the way his country is being sort of divided, not only along political lines, but also along confessional lines. So I think it's the responsibility of Christians to also make sure that they manage to rediscover that oneness, that unity, rather than pull in different ways in a tug of war. But that tug of war is political, it's regional, you're absolutely right, and you can see it along the whole region. But let's for 1 minute just pause and think that when we look at the Middle East today and we see all this mess, do we sometimes ask ourselves, why was this mess created? How was this mess created? What are we doing to uncreate this mess? And even going back further, do we also remember the times when we Christians fought each other in bloody battles? I can tell you of many stories where Christians, local Christians in the Middle East, still remember with horror some of the stories of what happened during the Crusade Wars. I mean, these are some realities of our history. So when we look at this sometimes and we adopt this sort of superior approach, I don't like that. It's not a superior approach that we should adopt because we also have a lot of historical baggage in our backyards. But what we should do is remember that there is something that unites us, and that is our Christian faith. And that faith talks about the koinonia, the sense of fellowship, of coming together, but it also talks about the sense of solidarity, the sense of oneness. And what better way to remember that than having come through the season of Advent and into Christmas, that we remember that the mystery of the Incarnation was basically God made man to save us. So if God made himself a man to save us, shouldn't we also try and save ourselves?
You're listening to a podcast from catholicchurch.org.uk.